Kia ora. Welcome to Lunch Money, the audio version of the live webinar that takes questions from our investors.
Welcome to another week of Lunch Money. I'm Brooke, one of the co-founders and co-CEOs of Sharesies, and I'm based in Australia, in Sydney at the moment. So I really want to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands of which I operate, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respect to their elders past, present and emerging. And I recognise and respect their cultural heritage, beliefs and relationship with the land and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. I'm also joined here by Alice today. Hi, Alice.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. And so for those of you who are new to Lunch Money, we do these every Thursday at lunchtime in Aotearoa time, and we're also available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. And Alice and I are really excited today to welcome Philippa Harford, the CFO of Infratil, which is an infrastructure investment company, to the Lunch Money today. And just a reminder, if you have any questions for us, you can submit them through the Ask a Question button down below. And please don't leave questions in the discussion areas. We may miss them and we want to make sure we can get to them. Also, a really important legal disclaimer is there's absolutely no personalised advice on this webinar, and please be kind and respectful to the speakers and your fellow viewers too. Otherwise, we will have to take steps to remove you from the webinar, and no one wants to have to do that. I'm really excited to welcome Philippa today. She is the Chief Financial Officer at Infratil and is responsible for Infratil's financial and management reporting, as well as all things tax, treasury, and risk related. Philippa's here today to chat about Infratil's latest financial results, which were released a few weeks ago. So massive welcome and haere mai, come on over, Philippa.
Kia ora, everybody, and thanks for the introduction, Brooke. Really nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to see you too. So I'm going to hand over to Alice. She can probably introduce stuff a little bit more and then get into some really great questions that she's lined up for you.
Cool. Thanks, Brooke. So, I'm Alice. I am a financial analyst here at Sharesies. So I'll be asking Philippa today about some questions about their latest financial results. So firstly, welcome back to Lunch Money, Philippa. You joined us around about a year ago, and we chatted all things Infratil and your financial results from last year. So as a quick note, we'll encourage anyone who's listening today who wants to learn a bit more about the company to listen to that. If so, that's available on Spotify and Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. But we'll talk about the year that has been. So firstly, can you give us a bit of a quick overview about what Infratil does, and then also a bit of a take on this year's financial results and how Infratil's gone?
Sure, absolutely. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Infratil, it was founded in 1994, and it was actually founded obviously in New Zealand. It was started by Morrison & Co, and Morrison & Co is like the external manager of Infratil. And so people like me, we work for Morrison & Co. I spend all my time working for Infratil though. And the idea about Infratil and the reason why it was founded by Morrison & Co was it wanted to give New Zealand investors an opportunity to invest in assets that they wouldn't have otherwise had an opportunity to own. So I suppose in some ways that's a little bit like Sharesies in terms of the way that it's flipped the model about the way people can invest in shares. And it started out with $50 million. One of the first investments that it bought was a smaller stake in Trustpower. In the late 90s, it then bought, for example, Wellington Airport. We now own 66% of Wellington Airport. Roll forward, give or take 27 years, and the equity value of Infratil is now $5.6 billion. So that's quite a big move in that 27 years. But the common theme that still remains is that Infratil's here and are to try to provide investors with an opportunity to have access to assets that they might not otherwise be able to own. So that's kind of, I suppose, the start of that, Alice. And I think what you then wanted me to do was go on to how our year's been. And I think it's, without a doubt, 2021 was absolutely remarkable. Go back to March of last year, we were on the verge of COVID. We've got two assets that were really fundamentally impacted by COVID. One of them was Retire Australia. That That's a business that we own about 50% of. It's got 27 retirement villages in Australia, 5,000 residents, right? So as you can imagine, last year when COVID struck, you know, our first priority was to try to keep residents safe because older people are much more exposed to COVID in terms of outcomes than younger people. We had to do a lot to try to respond to what was, you know, like something that we'd never had to deal with before in terms of a pandemic. And as Infotel, as a shareholder, you know, we had to then make sure we provided some financial support to that business. So that was one. The other asset that was impacted by COVID in our portfolio was Wellington Airport. It went down, its passenger throughput dropped by 99%, right? So we literally had, I think, less than 1,000 passengers, if we were lucky, in the month of April. So as a shareholder of Wellington Airport, we put in place some financial support and, you know, helped that business navigate what was a pretty difficult trading time. So that was the start of 2021. In the meantime, as you'd imagine, there were a lot of sort of questions in the market. The share market itself was quite volatile. We needed to provide an update to the market about how the business was tracking, give assurance to our investors and our bondholders and our banks that Infotel was okay. So we did that in about April. We then quickly moved on from there to actually do an equity raise, and we raised $300 million of new equity. And that was followed in October by an announcement that we were investing into a brand new sector, and that's diagnostic imaging. And we did that with buying a company in Australia, or buying a stake in a company in Australia called Qscan. So with effect from Christmas Eve, which was kind of like a Christmas present for us, luckily we got it done then, we bought that stake in Qscan. So that was a really busy time. And then I suppose a couple of other things just to reflect on for the Infotel shareholders out there. We obviously announced we were looking at selling our stake in Tilt Renewables. We announced that we'd done that, or actually it's just conditional on regulatory approvals at the moment. That's going to bring us $2 billion of proceeds. So we're expecting that to settle sometime in August. And then the icing on the cake, if you like, was in December, we announced to the market that we'd had an approach from Australian Super. They wanted to buy Infotel. First time in our history that that's ever happened. They offered a price of $7.43 a share. And our independent directors determined that that wasn't adequate. And they therefore advised the market that they weren't entertaining the offer. So all in all, that was our 2021. I think it was quite a relief to get to 31 March 2021 to put a line under that year and to then get on to the next one. But I do think that the business performed remarkably well. We came through, we kept our residents safe, we supported our businesses financially, we managed to continue to focus on growth, which, you know, isn't an easy thing to do in an uncertain economic backdrop. You know, we raised equity, did that quite well, and then deployed it. So, yeah. And now, actually, I should say we're really excited that we've now extended that diagnostic imaging investment, and we're now the proud owners of a sort of 55% stake in Pacific Radiology, which is a New Zealand business. So that's sort of it.
Well, it certainly seems like it's been a very, very busy year, you know, acquisitions, takeover offers, capital raising, pandemic. Like you say, I bet you almost, you know, had a sigh of relief when 31 March came around. And we'll touch on some of those big events that happened a little bit later on. But firstly, if you were to pick up, you know, the annual report or the financial statements for Infotel, when you're looking at the revenue or profit numbers, you know, what do these numbers mean? You mentioned before that you have, you know, a 66% interest in some companies, or, you know, different varying levels of ownership. You know, are these revenues added up, or is it just proportionate Infotel's ownership? Can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. You've actually hit the nail on the head, Alison. Actually, one of the business commentators said that, you know, our results were quite complicated, and you are correct. So essentially the accounting treatment depends on whether or not we control the particular company. So for someone like Trustpower and Tilt Renewables and Wellington Airport, the accounting test has determined that we have sufficient control over those companies that we consolidate them. So what that means is we bring all of their revenue into and expenses into our profit and loss. And by that, I mean 100%. And then further down the income statement, you basically recognize that you don't own it all. But that doesn't happen until almost right down at the bottom of the income statement. And it's kind of similar to the balance sheet in that regard. So if you took something like Trustpower at 51%, we bring all of their income in the way I just talked about. But interestingly enough, someone like Vodafone that we own 49% of, so just like 2% different, we don't make that treatment because the test has determined that we don't control that company because we've got another co-investor that also owns 49%. And because of that, we have to account for that company quite differently. So that does make the accounting, it's understandable. The test is the test and we all just have to kind of live with that. But it does mean that the accounting treatment for a 49% stake in Vodafone versus a 51% stake in Trustpower is quite different.
Cool. No, thanks for that. That definitely is really helpful, you know, when you're picking up the financials and trying to understand what they're actually capturing and what they mean. So I'm sure, yeah, that'll help a lot of people out there. And so when you're looking at the financials, I noted that net profit fell from a profit of about 240 million last year to a loss this year of around $49 million. Can you explain what kind of drove that?
Sure. One thing to note is that in the prior year, Tilt Renewables, which as I said, we consolidate, so we bring all of their activity into our income statement, they made a pretty significant gain on selling a wind farm in Australia. So in last year's result, our share of that gain is in that net profit figure that you're referring to. So that's one sort of distinction as to why last year was, say, 240 million versus this year being a loss. There's two other things. Trustpower, which again, as I said, we fully consolidate that. It made a loss on derivatives of about $80 million. To explain what a derivative is, obviously they trade electricity. In order to protect themselves in terms of the risk of the price of electricity, they enter into what's called a derivative. At balance date, if that derivative is out of the money, which was at that time, then they have to record that loss in their income statement. Again, this is just comes down to what the accounting rules are as to how you treat certain things. So that meant that loss and our portion of that loss came through our income statement. And the other thing to note is people will have seen that there was also an accrual of 225 million of performance fees to Morrison & Co. in relation to assets, or more to the point in relation to the outperformance of those assets. Now, that 225 million is based on like independent valuations of the international assets that Infratil holds. The actual independent valuation and the uplift, not all of that comes through the income statement of Infratil. So essentially you've got a big expense item and you don't have a corresponding revenue item, or at least not all of it. And the other point to note is, just as an example, that 225 million is payable in three tranches, and the second two tranches are only payable if the assets keep their value. But for accounting purposes, you have to record the whole 225 in one fell swoop. So unfortunately, there's a few things going on there, Alice, which give us a bit of a headache in terms of trying to explain it. But, you know, the principal thing is, and that's, I suppose, in some respects why we start to talk about EBITDAF and what that means. But the main thing is that there's a significant amount of differences from last year to this year. Some of those are unrealized and some of them are things that, you know, just won't come. As an example, the Tilt sale, that will show a significant gain on sale this year. And some of the 225 million accrued performance fee actually relates to Tilt.
Right. And yeah, you mentioned just then on EBITDAF, which was actually going to lead into my next question, which was, you know, when you're looking at the profitability, sometimes you see this measure EBITDAF being referred to. Are you able to give a bit of a brief overview of what that means and how that differs differs to net profit?
Sure. I think the first thing to emphasize is people should always, you know, refer to the accounts and use them as their starting point, because actually the good thing about the financial statements is they're all prepared in accordance with accounting standards. They're signed off by our auditors. And notwithstanding the kind of nuances of how we need to record investments, they are the solid place to go. The reason we talk about EBITDAF, though, is that gives you some idea about the operating result of the businesses. So what we do, that essentially what it is to just spell it out, it's earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. So it's basically saying if you took the operations of the business and you weren't thinking about how you funded it, and also what capital you're going to need to spend in the future to, say, replace assets, because that's what depreciation is all about. How did that business perform? So that's the idea of it, is to say, you know, what was the operation of the business like before we had to think about replacing assets and before we thought about how we funded those operations, i.e. debt. So that's what we do talk about. But as I said, you shouldn't see that as a replacement of what comes through the financial statements, because they are audited and they are prepared in accordance with accounting standards. So you can know that people have to use the same approach in the accounts and in the accounting standards, obviously. So what we do, though, is when we look at EBITDAF, we take our share of EBITDAF. So for each company, regardless of the way we account for it in our financial statements, we're saying, how did it perform this year? And what if you looked at Infratil's ownership of that company, what percentage of that EBITDAF belongs to Infratil? And that's the numbers that we talk about. And that's the way we sort of give guidance as well.
Right. I see. So yeah, like you say, it's a bit of a different measure. And then it's a matter of kind of pulling together and looking at the wider picture of all of these different financial measures to help, you know, yes, get a view of what's happened to the yes company. But no, thank you for differentiating the difference between those two things. And, you know, probably no better person to talk to the nitty-gritty accounting details than yourself. But if we now take a look at some of those big events that you mentioned before, firstly, Tilt Renewables. So Tilt Renewables, you mentioned that Infratil is selling its investment in that company. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening, where it's at, and you know, why is Infratil choosing to divest?
Sure. So just a little bit of background to Tilt Renewables. So it started as part of Trustpower. And as I said at the beginning, we owned Trustpower. We've bought our first stake in Trustpower, I think, in 1994. So we've held that company, and it's very dear to our hearts for a long time. It was spun out of Trustpower in about 2016. So what that means is we split the company up, or Trustpower was split into two, and shareholders of Trustpower, including Infratil, got a share in Trustpower and a share in Tilt. The reason why that was done is that it enabled Tilt to entirely focus on developing wind farms, and having it as a separate company meant that, you know, funding of those operations wasn't really getting blurred with Trustpower anymore. It enabled it to be a standalone company focused entirely on what its kind of mission was. And what it then did is it went out and embarked on building a significant number or sort of size of wind farms in both New Zealand and Australia. We, of course, have always had we've continued to have an interest in renewable energy. And I think one of the questions has come up is about, you know, what our focus has been on and whether we'll still do that. A really good example of that, though, is we invested in Longroad and in the US, and we've also invested in renewable energy in Europe. So in that context, what we started to see, because of course we are looking for further investment opportunities, and what became very apparent to us last year was that the demand for those sorts of assets was just eye-watering, right? So we were sitting there with Tilt Renewables, we had a 65% stake. We were looking at other investment opportunities offshore, and we could see how much value was being ascribed to those investments. So we decided that rather than hold that, the best outcome for Infratil shareholders was to take a view on Tilt and see if we could attract that kind of interest that we'd seen elsewhere? And if so, you know, we could then take that capital and choose how we would deploy it. So after probably what was, you know, the best part of 20 years of investment in Tilt, you know, through Trustpower and then as a standalone company, we took that opportunity. And as I said, that basically came through with proceeds of $2 billion. So quite a significant uplift in terms of where we saw value.
And so just touching on that, you mentioned about the proceeds that's coming through from the sale. Are you able to say or give indication on what Infratil is sort of planning on doing with that cash?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing we're going to do is pay down some of our or all of our bank debt. And as you can imagine, some of this is all about juggling timing of when you get the receipt of the proceeds and when you have an investment opportunity. Pacific Radiology was a really good example of that. So we you know, wanted to try and advance our investment with Pacific Radiology. We actually started that process a number of months ago. You can't always time these things perfectly. So what we did was we entered into a bridge facility with our banks that enabled us to buy Pacific Radiology. And then when we get the proceeds from Tilt, we'll pay back all of that bank debt. We'll still be left with more than like $1 billion of investment or money that we can invest, which is a significant sum even for Infratil. So what we're doing is our priorities continue to be the kind of investment thematics that we've talked about before, whether that be renewable energy, whether it be diagnostic imaging. We've also got obviously data and technology in Vodafone and CDC data centers. So those are the areas that we will continue to look at. We are open to, you know, whether there's other opportunities in other geographies. We have a bit of a sliding sort of a priority, if you like, as to how we do that. But those are our sort of principal areas at the moment. That's not to say we wouldn't look at something else, but we're always going to apply a higher hurdle to those than we do to, say, the investments we already know and we already have what I would call like a high conviction view of.
No, that's really interesting. And so if we just focus in on one of those themes that you mentioned before about the diagnostic imaging. So you mentioned you acquired, is it a 56% stake in Qscan, the Australian
right.
business? So that would
yep.
give you a controlling interest
that's
in that
right.
company. Can you chat a little bit around what that business does and why Infratil decided to invest in it?
Sure. So that what that business does is it offers, and I won't be able to go through all the technical medical terms, but it's got lots of really specialist machinery to do different types of scanning, whether it's as an MRI or whether it's a PET scan or basic, you know, things more basic than that. It was actually owned, the other shareholders are the doctors and some of the management team. Obviously, it's really critical to that business model that you've got the doctors working sort of hand in glove with you. So the reason for our interest in diagnostic imaging is, and I suppose this goes to the backdrop of the way we approach investment, we like to invest wisely in things that matter. So our threshold question is, when we're looking at something, we say, is that a kind of a thing that matters? So what matters, right? And if you think about the health system and the way that diagnostic imaging can improve outcomes for people, and also like the significant capital investment that's required to buy the machines, and the way that it can be sort of operated efficiently, we looked at Qscan and said that was an idea that mattered. We looked at the services that they provide, whether that be to private practice or whether that be through the public system. And we decided that that was something that we could have a high conviction on because we can see that the demand for those kind of services isn't going to go away. You know, people, the population is getting older. The treatments are getting more sophisticated and the ability of those machines and sort of diagnostics to sort of early detect problems and therefore save the health system money by, you know, preventing or getting involved earlier That's the basic theme behind it. And Pacific Radiology is also an extension of that.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point is, you know, is it quite a similar story for Pacific Radiology? You know, is it Infertil, I guess, cementing your position in that industry a bit more and, you know, making further investment in that space?
Yes, it is. And one important thing for Infertil is we like to have some scale. Okay, so, you know, when we go into a new sector, we'd like to have a sufficient size of investment, because obviously if we've got a really high conviction, that's great, but it's really only going to be meaningful to Infertil and therefore meaningful to Infertil shareholders if we can make that investment sizable. So having had the opportunity to buy that stake in Qscan and then within relatively short order, increase our exposure to that sector by also buying the sort of 55% stake in Pacific Radiology, you know, that was an excellent opportunity for us.
Awesome. And so perhaps one last question just briefly before I pass back over to Brooke to ask some questions from the listeners today. Going forward into the new year, what's in the pipeline?
Well, one of our focuses is going to be on what we do with our $1 billion. We've definitely got a number of options underway. And I think it's fair to say that if you were to do, you know, a little list of what our potential investment options are, or what we see as possible, you know, places we could put some money, we are relatively comfortable that that's a good list. It's fair to say, though, that we'll also be very disciplined in the way that we deploy that capital, just in the same way we would do any investment. We're not going to be pressured to deploy that capital, you know, tomorrow. We're going to make some good choices. As I said, we've got quite a clear direction about what the themes are that we're particularly interested in. We're open to some others, but they'll have a bit of a higher threshold. We like to communicate what areas we're interested in to our shareholders so that they can understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. So that'll be a bit of a focus. It's also going to be really exciting to welcome, you know, Pacific Radiology and Qscan into our group for like a full year. So that's going to be, you know, helping them find out about how Infertil operates and what we mean. So that will be on our books as well. And I think the other thing just to note is, you know, there's a lot of other activity in the portfolio that I haven't even started to talk about, like Canberra Data Centres, really good plug for them. You know, they've got two data centres they're building in Auckland. So we're going to have some data centres in New Zealand, I think, by operating early 2023. So that's really good. They're also building lots of data centres in Australia. And the other thing, of course, is Vodafone. So plenty going on. Yeah, sounds like quite a busy year.
Definitely sounds like it. Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Brooke, I'll pass over to you now for the Q&A.
Thanks so much, Philip. I've been really enjoying that conversation between you two, and I love that you've got this conundrum of what to do with $1 billion. I feel like it's really exciting, and I feel like I can imagine a lot of businesses will start tapping on your door to be like, hey, what about investing in us? I've got some really cool questions that have come through, and so I might kick into them. We've got Brian saying, hi, Philippa, I'm aware that Infertil are soon to receive the proceeds from the Tilt sale. We've kind of just talked about this, but if there's anything else you might want to add, and that about half of that will go to debt reduction, which is great, but are you able to give any more detail on what the balance will go to? I know we just discussed this, but if there's anything else you want to add there, or we can move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think we've largely discussed it. I think the only thing I'd say, Brian, is that we are going to be very disciplined in the way that we deploy it. And, you know, that's what our shareholders would expect.
Nice. And then Avon's like, yeah, a woman in charge. My question is, why has the current price of Infertil lifted in the last week or so?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, actually, because we went ex-dividend on the 8th of June. And what would normally happen, I think, when you go ex-dividend is your share price would go down. So our dividend was 11.5 cents. I looked at it yesterday and I was like, wow, what's going on here? Our share price is still up at 7.75 or 7.80. So I do think that, you know, we've got a strong portfolio of assets. They're robust, lots of opportunity in the portfolio. Clearly, I think the Australian Super offer has crystallised a lot of value for Infratil shareholders. And what I mean by that is it's almost like a market test, right? It's been able to say, look what at least one participant in the market was willing to pay. And even that wasn't enough. So, I think clearly some of it's also market backdrop. We've got really low interest rates at the moment, which is challenging people in terms of finding a home for their money. Something like Infratil, which can offer both capital growth and also an income yield in terms of dividend, I gather that's a good place to be. So I think our shares are in relatively, I wouldn't say high demand, but there's definitely interest in our shares.
Great. And Charisse asks, says, hi, Philippa, good morning. Infratil appears to be doing well. What are the future growth plans of Infratil as a whole, and where do you see it in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, I'd like to think that we'll continue to grow. I think we're very focused on what the opportunities are. And I think, you know, it's been encouraging that in the last 12 months we have actually been able to execute 2 acquisitions. Because as I said a little minute ago, there is actually a lot of demand for assets out there. And, you know, we could see that when we'd looked at renewable investments elsewhere. And yet, so to sit here and be able to say we were able to execute the Qscan acquisition and that we were able to execute PRG does tell you that actually there's a lot to be said for the quality of the investor. I think Infratil is well known. We're a long-term investor. I think we're a trusted shareholder. So that's enabled us to go into those processes with counterparties who actually, A, know that we're good for it, and B, they know what type of company we are, and we can, and that we're quite used to co-investing. I think that was important for Pacific Radiology, and that was important for Qscan, you know, because we sit alongside other shareholders. And we've also done that time and time again. So I suppose where I'm getting at is that, interestingly enough, it's a demanding market environment to try and deploy that capital. But I think there are unique characteristics about Infratil that make us quite an attractive acquirer. And I'd like to think that that puts us in a good place to deploy that capital. And that would be, so that's where I'd see us.
Great. And Rowan asked a question kind of extends on that is, are there any markets that Infratil will look to expand to or within, aside from maybe the ones you've mentioned?
Yeah, definitely. I think as we expand to, our approach has sort of been that if we look to a new geography, we'll tend to do that in a sector that we've got a strong understanding of. So it's hard to go into both a new geography and a new sector at the same time. That kind of feels like you're doubling down on the risk somewhat. So at a sort of high level, new geographies, you know, it's a little bit like how we went into renewable energy in the US and we've gone into renewable energy in Europe. We could also look to do renewable energy in another geography. So, you know, that's always on our sort of radar and options. Conversely, if we were looking at a new sector, and again, healthcare or diagnostic imaging is a good example of that, we prefer to do that in the markets that we know well, so Australia and New Zealand. And that's exactly what we did.
Great. And I'm going to combine 2 questions from Charles and Lockie here. So, you know, you've mentioned a bit about renewable energy being a bit of a focus and obviously just had the Tilt Renewables sale. Does Infratil see that it's got a huge focus or could, you know, deploy that capital really around dealing with climate change? And then on top of that, you know, do you have plans around integrated reporting or how does that shape up in your business?
Sure. Yes, we definitely do have the opportunity to deploy some of that capital in, you know, in a response to climate change. Longroad is a really good example of that. And if people have an opportunity to have a bit of our read of our annual report, there's some quite good discussion about how much Longroad's doing in the US in terms of building solar and wind farms, and exactly how much capital they're deploying. The interesting thing for us is that that hasn't required a lot of Infratil capital to date, but, you know, we could look to change that if we wanted to. So there's definitely an opportunity there. I think the other part of your question, Brooke, was around the climate change reporting. Is that right? Obviously, yep. that's something coming. We're very focused on, I think it's going to be something that as it comes in, with every sort of period, if you like, we'll all know a little bit more about it, about how to do it best. I think, climate change risk and being able to explain to shareholders what risks you have in relation to climate change, very, very important. But I think I do, we'll get better at it. Just like anything, like the first time you do it, you don't know everything. You learn more as you go along. So I think it's going to be, if I can use the phrase, it's going to be a bit more of a journey. But I think it's a very important step in the right direction.
Mm. Yeah, that's really important. It's great to know that that's being thought about and focused on. I've got one last question, and it's from me. I know your daughter's listening in today. Hi. And I think, we've had the last CFO we had from Xero was a wahine, your wahine. There's not too many women in finance and women in leadership roles, that are in the listed on the New Zealand Stock Exchange. So we'd love to know any advice you have for anyone who's looking to get into that career, and in particular, if there's any advice to women or others that have been underrepresented in leadership roles.
Yeah, sure. I think sometimes it actually just comes down to being brave. I think that if you overthink some of the decisions in your life, I'm sort of talking for myself. So I came out of tax, right? So I hadn't been, like an auditor or a financial controller. I moved out of a tax role to become deputy CFO. And at the time, it was a really big move because clearly if you get it wrong, you can't just put your hand up and go, hey, I've changed my mind. Can I have my old job back? So I do think some of it's just about being brave, and also, though, acknowledging what your strengths are and not focusing on what your weaknesses are. I think it's quite easy to, and I don't mean weaknesses, actually, I just mean gaps, right? So if you looked at the suite of things that I'm responsible for that you sort of outlined at the beginning, Brooke, I could have quite easily sat there and said, I'll never be able to do that, can't do that. But actually what I decided to do was focus on the things that I could do and the skills that I had and how I could take those skills and apply them across the other sort of disciplines that I needed to also be able to master if I was going to be a good CFO. And I think that's actually worked out quite well. And I would also say that, it's never about a person. It's always about a team. I've got a really strong team, and it's really important to, to support each other and develop other people, because the more you develop other people, the easier it makes your job. And, the more you can sleep at night because you've got a great team who, if needs must, they can pick things up if I'm not there.
Nice. Cool. Thank you so much for that. And thanks everyone for tuning in today. And a very special thanks to you, Philippa Harford, CFO of Infratil, for your time. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
So we'll be back at the same time next Thursday. You can register through the link in the chat. Please enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend, and we'll see you next week. Lunch Money will be back next Thursday, so keep an eye on out on Share Club, and you can join that via Facebook if you haven't yet. We'll share the link too, and via the Lunch Money newsletter. And you can register for the newsletter at the bottom of Sharesy's website. You see it in the footer there, and it's where you get newsletter insights on what's happening in the market. So again, have a great rest of your day, and thank you so much again to Alice and Philippa for joining in, and until next time, ka kite anō.
For more info, visit www.sharesys.nz or find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
Ka kite anō.
Take care and happy investing.